This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
We are getting into the last conversation for our show for today. And as always, if you do want to join our in-studio conversation, call us on 0861-987-000. Tweet us at PowerFM987. Tweet me at Sifiso_Skenjana. We are, of course, talking about the Deloitte Global Tracking, the trends report in the, of course, the lead up to the mining indaba that is kicking off next week. And we are joined online by Andrew Lane, who is, of course, the lead for energy resources and industrials at Deloitte Africa. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Good evening, Sifiso. Good to be with you.
And good evening to you too. Yeah, and I mean, I think it's always quite a nice one to come up with or release this report leading up into the indaba, but primarily also because it really, I think, it tees up some of the conversations. I think it also energizes the conversations that will be taking place in the plenaries there at the indaba as well. But maybe let's just start for anyone who may not have followed this piece of work, just understanding some of the design aspects of it. How is it conducted, and ultimately, what does it cover?
Sienna, thank you. So so this is our annual Tracking the Trends report. We bring it out every year around about this time, and we're now in our 14th edition. And we put it together globally based on what we're hearing and seeing from our clients around the world. So it really is a perspective of the industry based on what our clients are telling us globally. And yeah, as always, we publish 10 trends, and as you rightly point out, it's convenient to release it ahead of Indaba because it does frame some of the conversations.
Sure. And just getting into some of the trends, I mean, I guess, you know, one of the, you know, the first listed trend there is around generating a strategic advantage through natural capital. The metrics, mining and metals investor base, their decisions on are rapidly changing. Traditional calculations no longer provide sufficient picture of the risks and opportunities presented of a project lifetime cycle. And I think this is really, I think, an interesting one, and it's going to come through, I think, in other pieces of the conversation around the future of project finance in the era of mining we're going to get into, when we are getting pressure points around ESG, trust transfers and finance mechanisms and all of those things. And so certainly I think these assessment of risks and opportunities in how we model for them aren't the same anymore.
Yeah, look, I mean, this is an interesting one, and it's appearing for the first time this year. We've had ESG and environmental issues in the trends in years gone by. But this particular nuance of valuing nature, and as you point out, the natural balance sheet. Yeah, are we destroying natural capital, or are we creating natural capital? And I think it kind of changes the lens a little bit, and broadens it out from just sort of reducing emissions to looking at kind of nature-based solutions and how do you actually offset some of your own emissions by using natural solutions. To deal with carbon dioxide and greenhouse gases.
And I mean, one of the big issues as well that continues, I think, as organizations are trying to make sense of this particular one, and we're still staying with this particular issue around kind of natural capital and valuing it, is then thinking about, well, when we try to kind of, you know, do the social overarch over this thing, is that it's difficult to give an economic measure of that social benefit.
And that's exactly, if you think about it, that's kind of a little bit of why we are in the situation we're in, is that we've only, historically only really paid attention to financial capital. And what we've actually been doing over the years is depleting natural capital and depleting social capital to build financial capital. And it's a function of how we measure ourselves. You know, GDP is measured in monetary terms. Growth is measured in monetary terms. And I think what we're saying here is, you know, to get a proper, more holistic view, you need to think about some of these other aspects as well.
Sure. And yes, as we were talking, as you're saying that, Andrew, I was thinking actually the length that is used for measurement is going to be an interesting one as well, because some of these things don't work in interim and 4-year cycles. These are 5-year investments, 10-year transitions that we need to get into. And so how we measure progress can't always then be that over a 12-month period, you've got to have a demonstrable result. How is this going to change also the relationship between shareholder as well as executive management?
Look, I think, you know, the sort of quarter-by-quarter reporting thing does create a bit of a short-term focus. But I do think, you know, and this is featured in our trends over the years, but not over the years, but in recent years, that I think that the world is starting to realize that business does have a role in society, you know, and that pleasing shareholders is no longer the only thing that matters. I think that business, and particularly the mining industry, because the mining industry makes a very real impact socially and environmentally, that society does expect the mining industry to play its part in social outcomes and environmental outcomes and being a good citizen. So I think it's you know, there's a kind of a natural progression here, and I think it's kind of interesting to watch it progress.
And of course, some of the interesting developments there is circular economy as well. And I mean, this is really, I think, for me, what started as a view around, let's recycle. And then you realize, actually, no, we can absolutely create an adjacent economy over and above kind of, you know, our core business here. And now enterprises are starting to look at a circular economy value proposition as a differentiating factor in the mining spaces that they're occupying as well.
Absolutely. And I think that there's a certain inevitability. If you just extrapolate into the future, I mean, the time will come where, you know, there isn't any more virgin material to be mined, and we have to start thinking in a circular fashion. So I do think that that the role of the mining company is going to evolve into the future. And I think there's going to be more to it than just digging a commodity out the ground and selling it at a commodity price. You know, buyers of minerals are a lot more sophisticated these days. You know, and they're not just looking for a commodity at the commodity price. They're looking for something which is ethically sourced, low carbon footprint. They're looking for circularity. They're looking for security of supply. You know, and particularly as you start to think about the battery minerals and the projected shortage of some of the minerals of the future, security of supply is one of the big things that buyers are looking for at the moment.
And I guess in the circular economy context, what are the kind of big emerging, I guess, new sources of economy that are coming through in this particular report?
So look, I mean, on the circularity thing, I do think, as I mentioned, that you know, being a provider of materials, you know, does not necessarily mean you have to dig those materials out the ground. There are a bunch of other ways that you can do that, and I think, as I mentioned, I think that the role of the mining company is going to evolve going forward, and I think that if you think about how money is made. I think renewable energy is something to think about. I think circularity is something to think about. I think, you know, bundling different metals together, ensuring provenance, ensuring carbon footprint. I think all of these things are going to be value creating things for mining companies going forward.
Sure. Certainly, I think. And then one of the other trends that are coming through, and I mean, this is a big one, of course, Sasol, and of course, Eskom, decarbonization. Tell us a bit more around what's happening there.
So decarbonization, you know, we've spoken for a while around the mining industry's own carbon footprint. You know, it is an energy intensive business, so they do have a significant carbon footprint. And there's a lot going on, and there has been a lot going on over the last couple of years as they're all kind of moving to renewables and look at ways of substituting diesel and stuff like that in their businesses. But I think what's really interesting this time around is the carbon that's in your product, the scope 3 emissions that happen downstream. And, you know, if you think about the steel industry, for instance, you know, turning iron ore into steel has a massive carbon footprint. So now suddenly it's become really, really important for mining companies to think about how your product processed downstream and what carbon footprint does that bring. And how do we, as a mining industry, play our role in trying to reduce that carbon footprint? You know, and you get into things like green steel and all that kind of stuff. And you know, green steel is one thing, you know, holy grail, where you make it with hydrogen and stuff like that. But in the meantime, you're not going to get there overnight. So in the meantime, what can you do to reduce the carbon footprint of the traditional steel making process?
And I mean, on the point that we're not going to get there overnight, and for some sectors, we'll never get there. I mean, try decarbonizing construction. You know, it's just one of those sectors that it can't, just by virtue of its value chain. And so then you've got to ask and say, why is the investment into carbon capture, for example, not deepening enough to be able to say, as much as there are, all these, carbon contributions that are going to come through at a sectoral level, and these are all the kind of, allocations that we've given you on our journey towards net zero, but we understand that this sector may never get there, and so we've got to support it through some carbon capture type of innovation, etc., to ensure that they remain viable as well and they continue contributing in the context of the economy.
Yeah, look, cement is interesting, obviously, because it's such a hard to abate gas sector. But on the carbon capture and all those sort of technologies, I think you have a valid point in that, we're not going to really be able to move from fossil to green overnight. We're too heavily dependent on the fossil fuels right now. We've got too much of a legacy to deal with. And absolutely, it's imperative that we start to roll out these renewable technologies. But I do think that in between, in that middle ground, there is a role for carbon capture and some of those kind of technologies.
So it is 46 minutes after 7 o'clock. We continue our conversation with Andrew Lane, who is the lead at Deloitte Africa for Energy Resources and Industrials. Of course, reflecting on their Global Tracking the Trends report for the mining industry, and really, I think, also something to whet our palates ahead of the mining indaba as well. Some of the conversations that certainly I think are coming through, Andrew, is around the role of innovation in the sector as well. And it is coming, I think it does trickle into some of the points we've made around, carbon capture technology, circular economy and all of those. But really, I think this urgency around continuing the use of innovation and technology to support the sector.
Yeah, innovation is an interesting one, and I mean, the mining industry has over the years they've really struggled with innovation. Yeah, for many years, it's been something which cost a lot of money and never delivered any results. And I think what's emerging now is that the way you innovate is starting to change. And it's not necessarily about a corporate R&D department, but it's more to do with how you collaborate, how you incubate small businesses, how you work with startups, how you incubate new startup businesses. And actually, it's quite interesting that you have to deal with that in a very different kind of a way, because the traditional way that we approve projects and manage projects in the mining industry is, it's very risk averse, lots of paperwork, long time periods, lots of feasibility studies, and that actually is far too slow for the pace of innovation that's happening right now. And so it's a little bit of a change in culture and a change in way of viewing the world. But now, instead of this big corporate machine, we need to start thinking about how we work with small businesses and startups and young kids with thick glasses and it's not that the mining industry struggles a little bit with that, because it's a very different way of doing business.
Yeah. Sure, those smart kids with the thick glasses, wait until those glasses steam up and they're busy cooking up a storm in that brain. And I mean, on that point, Andrew, is really, I think, linking again to one of the other trends, which is a kind of, workforce health and safety. And I want to bring innovation here as well, because, the role that Spectrum can play in particularly kind of devices that are used on the mine, in also being able to kind of do geolocations within the mine as well. And that all of that coming in as part of existing kind of technological innovation. It's there. Spectrum 5G. And we've seen already in the likes of Poland, Norway, these technologies being rolled out, partnerships with Ericsson into deploying these devices into the mines, really then translating into lower fatalities, higher levels of health safety and health and safety in the context of mines.
Yeah, look, I mean, you're right there. I mean, all the telcos and all the telecom providers are very interested in this industry. As you point out, you know, connectivity and bandwidth is critically important right now. You know, if you think about just the change in how digitization changes the way you operate a mine. You're in a traditional underground mine in the good old days. You didn't know what happened today until the night shift supervisor comes up from underground tomorrow morning.
Mm.
And then by the time you've kind of figured out what's going on and the day shift supervisor goes underground, you know, all the safety critical decisions have been made. And you start running with a kind of a two-day gap between something happening and being able to respond to it. And now we can do that in real time. Yeah, and that's all to do with building in connectivity underground. If you think about, you know, the whole move towards automation and autonomous trains and autonomous trucks, those are all critically dependent on quality connectivity.
Mm.
You know, you can't have a remotely controlled truck suddenly, you know, lose signal on its way down a slope. You know, So yeah, you're quite right. I mean, I think that the telecoms world and 5G and technologies like that are becoming really important.
Sure, and I mean, I think really when we think about that as well, it must also be around and you know, the conversation. And I think, Andrew, when I was looking here at this particular report, the piece that was missing for me, I think, is the human capital component, particularly from a skills migration point of view, as well as, you know, a skills transformation point of view. Because as you're making the point around digitization of some parts of the mine, there's got to be the skills investment that we're making that is informing the shift in the operating model that is translating in the mine of the future. And doesn't seem to be a dominant theme coming out of, I guess, all the surveyed participants as well. And that's probably a little bit concerning.
Look, talent is a big issue. And as we go through this transition, you know, we're going through a technology transition, modernization transition, and an energy transition. And it creates, it sparks two questions. First of all, you know, we're already in a talent-constrained situation, and that's a global situation, and it's worse for us here in South Africa. So there is a shortage of talent, and now the skills that you need are evolving. And you start to think about, you know, the skills that you're going to need in 10 years' time. You know, where are those kids now? And what are we doing to make sure we give them those skills? And it really starts, it makes workforce planning quite interesting. It makes it very important to think about how you develop skills and then and how you develop and nurture and collaborate around the skills base that you require in a country. And there's the opposite to that as well, which is, you know, as these things change, there will be a bunch of people who can't make that transition.
Mm.
And what happens to them? And then how do you think innovatively around socioeconomic outcomes and alternative income streams and other forms of business in mining communities to make sure that you minimize the impact on those that can't make the transition?
And I mean, I think to the point around these transitions is that they must be just, right? And it's to the point and say, how do you ensure retributive justice, social justice, you know, distributive justice as we transition, you know, from, you know, one, you know, form of mining activity today into what it'll look like in the future? And I think certainly for me, you know, the emphasis around the social component, particularly in mining, has been around the community piece and less so around the employee. And you start to see it because as soon as then, you know, labor bargaining season comes through, and then all of the miners' issues now start to come back onto the table, because these enterprises, certainly I don't think they are prioritizing that.
Look, you're right. I mean, it does have to be just. And I mean, I think we've seen quite dramatic.
Oh, I think we've lost Andrew there. Eskom might be starting 8 o'clock for him, and so we will try to pick him up in a second as well. Andrew, are we good? Okay, we're still re-establishing that line. And I think, as I was saying, power listeners, that for me, a very important part of this conversation is the skills and skills migration, and ensuring also then it's the, you know, we are just and we act in a just way for our biggest stakeholders, which is our employees. And I think this is a sector that has historically been unjust to the employee base. And certainly, I think, you know, we must start to again ask these questions and say, well, what does it mean? But I think sometimes what I do experience with some of these mining companies is that they haven't baselined anything. If you ask them today what their skills baseline is and how does that, what does the delta look like from the existing skills order to that baseline into the skills of the future for this particular miner? Very few miners are able to answer that point. And maybe to bring Andrew back into the conversation, it's exactly that. Andrew was saying that, you know, talk to any of the miners now and ask them about a skills audit. Ask them about a skills baseline. And two, ask them about their view about critical skills in what their organization will look like in 5 years, and say, how big is that delta? And very few people even have an answer for that at this point in time from a mining point of view.
But a big delta as well. I think you've got to dig in and say, well, you know, how do we actually close that delta? And, you know, I think that what I was kind of trying to get to when the line dropped was, you know, this transition has to be just, you know. The communities have got to tell it when they don't think it's just. But it does start to make the transition, because we live in a global world. So, I mean, there's a little challenge there to make sure that it's competitive, but we do it in a way that's safe.
Sure. Andrew, I think we will make peace that we're struggling currently at this point in time with that line. And really, I think, thank you very much, Andrew, for joining us. And yeah, certainly wishing you all the best as you go into the Indaba next week. And power listener, that was, of course, Andrew Lane, who is the lead for energy resources and industrials at Deloitte Africa, of course, giving us some thoughts around the latest global tracking the trends report for the mining industry coming from Deloitte.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.